This is the Grow Strategist Radio Show, the peer-to-peer program for executives of mid-sized companies. All comments, views, and opinions are solely those of the host, guest, and callers. It's time for the Grow Strategist Radio Show, and here's your host, Aldana Ambler.
Welcome to the show. This is the Grow Strategist, Aldana Ambler. And each week on the Grow Strategist, we rotate through different growth strategies and geography and industries. You know, so one week it's a retailer in Singapore that's growing through, say, franchising. And the next week it's a manufacturer in Kansas City that's growing through acquisitions. And then what I do periodically is I look for those universal themes that are affecting all of us, no matter what industry we're in or what location we're in, things that we're all having to learn from. So I also am trying to reach back to some of the people who've been on the air with me before. And those are the ones that have these centralized themes I'm finding. That's kind of interesting. So today's guest was, Harry's very special to us. He was our first guest in 2005. So here we are in our seventh year running this show. We're almost at the 300th guest. And Harry's back! Harry Greenling, I can see you, they can see you, and they know you're there. Yay, Harry!
Hi, Aldana, how are you?
Well, I think I sound a little bit better than you today. You're feeling kind of sick, huh?
Yeah, I have to apologize. I'm fighting off a pretty bad chest cold, so every now and then I'll probably clear my throat at exactly the wrong time.
Well, we'll edit it out. But great. I wanted to make everybody, you know, our theme today is talking about agility and being able to be really responsive and make things happen and flexible and tenacious. And then the man sitting there going, so I better give you an excuse in the beginning, huh?
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Usually it's a lot more energy. All right. So before we even get into the agility, flexibility, tenacious side of things, we've got to update people a little bit on your story. So I'm going to give bullets. All right. So here's my impression of Harry, and he'll add to it for me. I went to the University of Pennsylvania. I actually like the guy, even though he went to Penn State. But, you know, this is a really bright guy who founded DoubleStar in 1993, and their positioning is that they're around talent management and workforce and analytics. So it's not just the standard staffing kind of firm. You know, they're really going to analyze, you know, what is the mix and how do you optimize, right, the talent piece. Right. These are very bright people, I'm looking at the customer list. Every time I look at this, it's like really cool. For over 300 clients, particularly in the technology-driven kind of space, so the ones I remember, a lot of the big pharma. So like GlaxoSmithKline and SAP Americas, University of Pennsylvania Health System, Cisco, Siemens, you could probably imagine the list, TD Bank, Albert Einstein Healthcare, blah, blah. If it's a good firm, they're probably using DoubleStar. And then one of the cool things that I know about him is that he's been on the Inc. 500 a couple times, and he's been, I think, on the Philadelphia Top 100 six times, something like that. Love this one. You're one of only 15 inaugural members of the Philadelphia Business Hall of Fame.
Yeah, you know, I'm still looking for the actual Hall of Fame.
Well, don't have it. Don't forget.
I've walked around the city, and I really can't find it. I was hoping to see a bust and maybe my old sneakers.
Yeah.
But it's not there. I think it's more titular than an actual. But
I'm in a couple of Halls of Fame. I'm in the Women's Hall of Fame for Atlantic County. And at one point, there was a whole series of pictures that were in this hallway in one of the casinos. And so Our Hall of Fame was literally a hall. It went from a parking garage out to the – it was a great place to be. My goodness, there are all these people seeing it. But, you know, Hall of Fame makes some people feel like they died.
Yeah, I haven't seen the Hall of Fame yet, and so I don't really know where it is. But there's a plaque somewhere in my office that has that on it. So
that's cool. That's cool.
Yeah, it is cool.
All right. So in 2005, the show, if I'd like people to go back and listen to the archives and listen to how Harry sounded in 2005, it's fascinating. One of the key things that you were doing at the time is you had planned some acquisitions. You were really gearing up. None of us really knew about the 2008 implosion of the financial markets. You know, you wouldn't have thought that was going to come in 2005. We had some struggles and some challenges in 2005, but we weren't predicting that one. And so this is a follow-up program saying, okay, now it's after 2008. A lot of your clients were in the financial markets. It wasn't just pharma. You know, like Chase and with some of the other ones. I've forgotten a few of their ones. I apologize. TD Bank. I mean, you know, you've got some clients in financial. Yeah. But you're still alive. So what I wanted to do is get an update of, tell us a little bit about what happened when the recession hit. You know, did it hurt you? How'd you handle it short term? And then what are you doing now? So let me start with that. What size was your company in, you know, like 5 years ago?
So 5 years ago, we were just getting some momentum back from the 2001-2002 recession.
Yeah, we've all been on a roller coaster, haven't we?
Yeah, we were, we got to a good size, and then we shrunk a little, thanks to the 2001-2002 recession. And then by 2005, we were probably back on the 4 to 5 million. We have a couple different ways of measuring the business. So let me say we were 4 to 5 million in staffing and maybe 2 to 3 million in workforce analytics. So we were hanging right around 7 or 8 million.
Okay. Because I remember in 2007, by 2007, you were at about 15, 16 million.
Well, that counts the third division of the company, which is a technology division. So if you, yes, if you take all three kind of lines of business that we have, by 07 and probably 08, maybe 06 and 07 were the big years, we had 2 years in a row above 15 million.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay, because we talked, you know, one other time, you know, about 5 years ago, and 15, 16 million was my notes. Okay,
and
so
by the way,
when...
Yeah, and just to be clear, the original question was 05. If we count that division of the company, we were right around 11 million in 05. Yeah.
So 08 hits. The fourth quarter of 08 hits. What happened?
Oh, the floor falls out.
Okay. So did everybody freeze? You know, you didn't have hiring. You know, how far, how bad was it? How far down did you go?
Well, the measure would be a couple ways to measure it in art. Because we have three lines of business that bring in revenue, I think the easiest measure to understand is that reflects the marketplace is that the staffing business went from 9 million by itself. In 2 years, we were down to 5 million. So
that's one of the reasons I asked this. And here's the first lesson for folks. One of the ways to be resilient and have some, you know, flexibility, especially related to recessions, multiple revenue streams matters. You know, the fact that we have multiple companies ourselves made a big difference. If I was only relying on growth strategy planning during, you know, the fall of 08, I wouldn't be sitting here.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. When we realized a long time ago, when no one's hiring, no one's hiring us, right?
Yeah.
So... that's sort of been our planning mantra in the background, is that we always needed multiple lines of business and multiple revenue streams in the event that the worst case happened. Yeah. And no one ever thought the worst case would happen, because even in the worst economic climate, jobs still churn and companies still hire. What happened in 08 was much, much worse than anything we had seen in our, you know, up to then about 15 years of operation. So it was much, much worse than we could have ever envisioned.
This is my fourth recession, and this one has a deeper sting. I think what it has is a longer tail of uncertainty. So that's the next question. So you get hit like that. How did you handle, especially as a talent expert, how did you handle, you know, like the surgical decisions about how many layoffs you would do? You needed your core.
I can be real candid about this, because the last time the mistake we made is that we did not act fast enough and we didn't act with enough certainty.
Mm-hmm.
So this time, at the beginning, you're not sure how bad it is.
Yeah.
But as soon as you're able to diagnose that this is looking bad, what we did this time was we cut fast and we were very certain about where we had to cut.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on one hand, you hate to lose talented people. On the other hand, it was very clear early on that if we didn't take real decisive action and make the hard decisions fast, that we wouldn't make it.
Did you do layoffs, or did you have to fire people? What's the combination you used?
Well, we did layoffs, and the first one we did was sort of a medium-sized one, right?
Give me some numbers.
Meaning probably we lost about 20% of our staff.
Okay.
And then attrition took care of maybe another 5-7% of people who left. Yeah. And then we had to do another 10 or 15% of our staff when it became crystal clear that we hadn't gone far enough and revenue wasn't supporting our decision. So we ended up probably, the high, we probably had about 110 people working for us, and the low, probably 45, 50.
That's such a huge change. You know, one of the things we did, just to share it with you, some of the existing clients, the active clients, they wanted to make it sound like they were better than they were and didn't want to really admit how much pain they were in, even to us. And one of the things, I felt like I was lucky thinking of this, I reached out to some of the inactive clients to check on them. To see, are they okay? What did they need? Because even if their account wasn't active, which still, you know, it's a long-term repeat kind of business, they were much more candid because they didn't have an active account. It didn't look like they were trying to avoid us or anything like that. In fact, some of them were so candid, it was amazing how open they were. And their reactions told us how really deep it was, and it made us kick into something really different from the active clients. That fascinated me.
Well, I think, you know, as a consultant, when we consult, our job is to hold up the mirror.
Yes.
And, you know, you were in that role, and, you know, you didn't want to really look at that image in the mirror back then, you know. People who were doing it for themselves were probably able to be very candid with you because they knew you understood, right?
Yeah.
And you weren't judging them.
And they could give, you know, that's one of the reasons that we ended up doing a lot more growth financing, ironically, because the banks weren't able to do it, so finding some private investors for people helped.
Right.
So, you know, that's no fun. This is a talent expert going down 40 people from 110. Wow. That's
big. It wasn't fun. And, you know, luckily some of it was natural attrition.
Yeah.
And, you know, it took us about 8 months to make that adjustment, but it wasn't pretty.
So now where are you now? So, you know, how far has the company grown back up out of the hole?
Well, in terms of number of people, we stayed the same.
No kidding.
So what we're doing short term, and this gets back to your visibility comment, right? Mm-hmm. That our clients have no visibility into the future, and therefore we have no visibility into our future. So to counter that, what we do now is we have a stable of about 15 or 20 contracted workers who consist of our ex-employees, we've trained, or other people that we've engaged along the way who we have also trained, and we deploy that kind of flex team as we need them. Now that will only last as long as those folks decide to work on a semi-regular basis, or the job market opens up and those people can get
I mean, if the situation changes, the flex force might be revisited. But you're not alone in, you know, even as you dig out of a hole and come back up, I'm not surprised. I'm hearing some people, more than one person saying, you know what, we're not even intending to everybody return. We're going to be more flexible. We've got to be more nimble because we don't know exactly what's going to happen with the economy and the clients and such. So we have no intention. It scares some folks because it looks like the jobs aren't there. But the work is, you just don't necessarily have it as consistent. Yeah?
Well, you know, I tell my clients this all the time. Only a fool would hire into uncertainty, right? So.
Well, then most of us are fools, but.
So if there's a lot of uncertainty, you know, you can't really hire. And our clients are in that position, and I'm talking large companies.
Yeah.
You know, where there's uncertainty, you know, another thing that's going on that doesn't get talked about a lot in the media is that very quietly, a company might have 50,000 employees, you know, in 2008. And if you look at them now, they have 50,000 employees. So on the face, it looks like, you know, they weathered the storm and didn't lose a lot of jobs. Where the devil is that of those 50,000, 10,000 jobs were lost in the U.S. and 10,000 new jobs were created in China or Russia or Brazil.
Exactly. Yeah. Right? That's another thing that happened, in, you know, with the recession queuing it. It made some people who weren't offshoring start it. So I want to make a break, but I'll tell you what. I need to know essentially what's the volume now. If your high point was at about 15, 16, what are you at now?
We'll probably do about 7 million this year, 7
wow.
to 8 million.
So this was a big hit, but you're resilient and you've made money every year.
Well, you know, we've learned to make profit out of less money, so
revenue.
So
there you go. Now, this is one of the things I want people to listen, because they'll sit there and say, well, I didn't get back to 15, 16 million. So, you know, wait a minute. I've seen some people, they try so hard to drive back to 15, 16, drive up to 20,
right,
and ask them how much their net was along the way, or how sick they got, or how scared they are, or how leveraged their house is. And it's like, I don't know if this is smarter. On that lovely note, I'm going to take a break, and we'll come back, and we're going to talk about how do you stay tenacious and resilient, et cetera. I'm going to break it into a couple of categories, Harry: sales, staffing, innovation, and financial, okay? This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. We'll be right back.
Each week, I download The Growth Strategist into my iPod to listen to while I'm on the treadmill at the gym, because the host, Aldana Ambler, knows what's on my mind as president of a $50 million company. With 30-plus years of experience as an award-winning entrepreneur and consultant, plus 6 years hosting her weekly radio talk show, she knows what she's talking about. And when it comes to acquisitions, succession, growth financing, franchising, going public, joint ventures, global product launches, you name it. And her candid interviews with the presidents of Midsize Company provide great examples and ideas.
You're logged on to The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. Call in right now with your questions and comments toll-free at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Now let's jump into another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's Aldana Ambler.
Welcome back to the show. This is The Growth Strategist, Aldana Ambler. Today we're talking about how do you have that tenacity and flexibility and, there's like an agility that we're going to be needing, and we've needed for a while. So I found Harry Gwindling again, and Harry was our first guest in 2005, and he's back. And this time we're talking about, his staffing firm, his workforce analysis kind of firm. He took a hit just like everybody else. Of course he did. He's related to workforce management. He's not going to be immune. He's going to feel it first. And what I've really been impressed by is even though they took the dip, they did it, surgical cuts, and they went down quite a bit, but they've made money every year. And this is the point. So what I want to talk about is that marketing and sales, you probably have had to adjust. What kind of clients are you going after? What are you looking for? What are you promising? How do you price it? How did you find some customers? Let me be more specific. I would imagine that the buying cycle went longer. It used to take a month to get them from the time you talk to the time you got a job.
Right.
And then it would be, they want everything and then nothing happens, right? What did you do about the long buying cycle of the last few years?
Well, it's not just that it lengthened. Actually, a couple things happened. So the first thing that happened is decisions that used to take 30, 60 days now took 3 to 6 months, right, number one.
Yeah.
Number two, what clients wanted for the price doubled. The amount of service, because, you know, everybody knew the position that everybody was in and everybody was trying to optimize their spend, which is fair and rational. And then number three, the sheer number of opportunities that used to be available were no longer available because there were less players in the shopping field.
Yeah.
And then four, bigger players who used to ignore us and ignore our clients started swimming downstream to eat the smaller fish because the big fish weren't there as much. So, and by the way, in our
industry.
Sounds
like great fun.
It gets worse. The fifth thing is that work that we used to get in a little 3 to 6 month assignments now were being taken by unemployed HR people.
Yeah. I was going to ask you if the people who are instant consultants, they're not unemployed, they're a consultant all of a sudden. Yeah, right.
They became competition, right? So,
yeah.
And by the way, they were charging, they didn't know how to price their services as a business.
Mm-hmm.
They were simply pricing their services as an individual trying to pay bills.
Right.
So I couldn't really compete. I mean, a firm with an ongoing business can't really compete with an individual charging individual rates.
You know, we're still doing cleanup projects from the people who were between jobs that became instant strategic planners, and they've done some damage. And we're going in to, you know, help figure out, okay, wait a second, that sounded nice, because that's where that person worked at that company for 30 years and they replicated the one strategy they knew. Well, that didn't mean it applied to you. So you're probably going to have some cleanup projects yourself, because not everybody can do that analysis of the workforce the way you guys do.
Yeah, there'll be some messes for sure.
So what did you do about those five things?
I'm sorry?
What did you do about those five dynamics? They don't sound easy. What'd you do?
Well, they're not easy. So the first thing we did was we accepted the truth that our prices would be lower and we were going to have to pack our engagements with more value. So
yeah.
Rather than fight that, we accepted the truth and realized that if we were going to stay in business, we had to deliver what the marketplace was asking for. So that translated in terms of real action, that's translated into, and this was painful, letting go some of our more senior consultants who had excellent skills, had been with us for a long time, but unfortunately whose skill set was not supported in the new marketplace. So we ended up taking very different projects, staffing them with different level of resources, and basically changing our delivery model on our side so that we could deliver the same thing with a little more packed into it at a lower price. So we had to adjust how we went, how we organized projects internally.
Yeah.
Then in terms of trying to compete for business, what we did, and I think two things saved us here. One is that we were in business for 15 years, and by virtue of that, people knew we would be in business. People knew that we were there for them. We had long-term relationships with a lot of clients.
That helped.
And I think that helped, absolutely.
It's not like you calling up and someone says, who?
Right. The second thing that mattered is that a lot of firms would have cut back on their marketing. We doubled our marketing. So,
oh, I'm glad to hear you say that. I've been recommending that to people, and they don't understand it. Because at the same time, there's all this new noise in social media and online.
Right.
And a lot of new companies got created by the recession. So that's what people are seeing as though that's what's credible. And in a recession, a long-term company, if they don't hear from you, like within a month, 2 months, they think you went out of business.
Yeah, absolutely. We were very careful about how we did marketing, because here's the other problem. We increased our marketing, but we had less budget.
Mm-hmm.
So we started spending our marketing dollars differently to focus on more one-to-one eyeball-to-eyeball interaction.
Yep.
When the rest of the world was sending out cool little social media videos and things like that, we decided to get in front of people and reinforce the relationship reinforce our skill set. So we increased our one of our marketing techniques is to hold seminars that are purely educational, not sales oriented. So, for example, we're doing one coming up in June, I think, on how video and web media is going to change recruitment.
It's
a topic that.
I can see the effect of it, but I probably don't know like half the points you're going to make because you live it all the time. So you made several changes to really get the right kind of projects, have the right people deployed, look at the pricing, increase the value. You spent a lot of time. I guess my question on it is, who did that? Did you have the executive team really dig into this? Is this primary role yours? Do you have a sales manager who led it? Who did that?
Good question. We have a head of business development. He was heavily involved. The team that reports to me, you know, the leadership team, we were heavily involved in meeting and how to do that. The head of the technology division helped a lot because he is he definitely runs day to day all the operations on our technology tools and that business. He made an interesting change that really paid off. He decided to focus on one vertical, which was that was a bold move because, making the bet on one thing, that's a big bet. You know, it's putting all your chips on.
I can feel the discussions about that around the table. Is that the same guy that was in charge of the tech division, seven years ago? Yeah?
Absolutely.
Good. It's, you had stickiness in that role. That's good.
Yeah, well, and he made a great call because that could have gone badly, very badly.
Yeah.
And, we knew the risk involved in that. So we were able to, he was pretty sure of the bet. So, we made that bet and it worked out well.
Now, did you change any of the salespeople or try any different personnel at different levels in sales?
No. What we did was we sort of got back to basics. And this is another thing that is important. I remember I had a meeting with my team, and I said, okay, guys, here's the new future. You all got demoted. And by the way, that includes me. So we're all going to go back to doing the work that we did $10 million ago in revenue.
Unfortunately, that was true.
That was true.
You went 16th, it really was a big drop. We had to say something similar. You know, it was funny. One sentence was, you're all immediately promoted. You all have to think strategically, long-term, make decisions, make suggestions about the improvement of the company, because none of us are going to be smart enough to do this
right.
And on a day-to-day basis, it's going to feel like we all got demoted. So we said it was like both ways. That's intriguing.
Well, that's your way, actually. I wish I was smarter to put the positive spin on it.
Yeah. We found ourselves saying, you're going to feel schizophrenic. You have to sound like you're really ahead of everybody else and you're on top of your game, and the next minute you will not know what you're doing and feel lame and over your head. And it is a very bipolar kind of feeling. We're going to need meds by the end of this recession so you can laugh about it. Anything else that you did to improve sales or marketing during this period?
I'll tell you, one of the things we did that I question my own sanity is, we've been in business for 16 and a half years, and we had never bothered with PR at all. Never. So in the middle of the recession, when we had hardly two nickels to rub together, I hired a PR firm.
I got really lucky. I had been spending enough money on PR in between 2001 and 2005 for about three or four major reasons. And ironically, some of the things like the radio program launching and some other and a business launch, right. I mean, I had some things that were newsworthy enough that it kind of happened. And then we saw the positive and got reminded again. And it was like, that's your pocket. it helps. If someone else is writing about you,
Well, no, what happened was, it was interesting because the PR firm had one great idea, which we would have never thought of. And that was, instead of, we didn't have any news coming out of the business that mattered. I mean, we were just kind of, here's our news. We stayed in business last month, and we were excited by that. Their view was that the PR value that we had was not promoting the company, it was promoting our knowledge.
Yeah.
So, Within 12 months, within 3 months, come to think of it, of hiring the firm, we ended up on Fox Business News, Washington Post, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, a bunch of TV shows, and it was all commenting on the condition of the job market.
That makes sense. I've seen people even, when they're trying to take that tact, we get asked about, how do you grow during recessions? And that's the news. It's not necessarily about us. It's about that. And I've seen people who are writing books. What they'll do is they go on LinkedIn and they look at articles that are related to their topic, and they'll almost critique what an article says or critique a news item or something like that. And so they really position themselves as that expert, the place to go on their topic. So I'm glad that happened to you. I know I've seen you on, USA Today and all this kind of stuff. So it's working.
Yeah,
I'm going to take a break, and we'll shift to some of the questions about, how have you been innovative? What's changed? You mentioned a few of pieces of it. So we're going to take a break, and we'll come right back with Harry Grindley of Double Star. This is The Growth Strategist, Aldana Ambler. We'll be right back.
It pays to listen to The Growth Strategist if you are an executive running a mid-sized company. As the CEO of a $75 million business, I like to listen to the first segment of each show when Aldana Ambler provides practical advice about the growth strategy of the week. There's no fluff in her interviews. Her guests are all presidents or CEOs of companies between $20 million and $200 million a year. Aldana's candid interviewing style reveals how they executed their ESOP, made their acquisitions work, timed their initial public offering, or obtained growth financing. Aldana Ambler's show helps bring out the growth strategists in us.
You're logged on to The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. Call in right now with your questions and comments toll free at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Now let's jump into another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's Aldana Ambler.
Welcome back to the show. This is The Growth Strategist, Aldana Ambler. And today we're talking about how do you have agility and be flexible and be tenacious. You've been through a knockdown, battle with the the recession of the last few years and you're coming up from the hole, not everybody has been profitable the whole time, even though they had to downsize. So I found a gentleman whose company is a specialist in the talent management and workforce analysis space. Good for them. And they would know exactly what's going on with this, but they're not immune. They got hit just like everybody else. So Harry Grindling's with me from Double Star. And, you know, they took a hit. They went from 120 people down to, what was it, 40? I mean, that's a big 45. Drop. That's a big drop. So we've talked a little bit about what you did to improve your sales and get nimble and get some yeses. And what I want to know about is the innovation process, because it sounds like you weren't just trying to sell better with the one-on-one. You had to figure out how to add value. So, and bundle the product. You said pricing lower and delivery mode. Tell me about the internal company process on innovation. How'd you find time to do that when you're racing to try to close stuff?
Well, unfortunately, we had lots of time because we weren't as busy as we had been, right?
So you don't have a lot of billable work. What the heck, huh?
Yeah, so what we decided to do is kind of consult with ourselves. And, you know, we asked the question, if we were starting the business, this was the most important thing we did, I think. If we were starting the business today, yeah, knowing what we know, what would the services be that we put forth? What innovative things would we bring that no one else is bringing?
That was smart.
And yet those discussions led to a whole bunch of bad ideas,
yeah,
but a whole bunch of good ideas as well.
Yeah.
And we were able to pull three or four things out of that that we were able to then take to the market.
It's a good idea.
And we've had some success with them. And one of them is, if anyone goes to our website, there's a button for our workforce analytics tool that says free proof of concept.
Mm-hmm. That's smart.
And we would have never done that before.
Yeah.
But you know what? And you know what? We've gotten not a lot, but we've gotten two or three companies to call us up and say,
yeah,
I want a free proof of concept because I'm looking at solving this problem, and I'd like to see what this looks like in your solution. So
that's smart. How long did that take to work through and figure out and make sure it didn't scare you to death that you did it?
You know, it takes a month or two to kind of socialize the idea, get used
yeah
to it, kind of financially test it to see how much it's going to put us behind.
Yeah.
You know, another strategy was to, and we did this before in the previous recession, and it worked well, which being privately held is the only way you can get away with this. But the financial plan was not to go out of business. In other words, it wasn't to have a 10% or a 12% or an 18% margin. The plan was to spend no more than we took in and just to stay sort of flatlined, you know,
yeah,
even revenue, even
yeah,
spend.
You're going to stay profitable no matter what.
Right. And what was interesting is in adopting that strategy, we were able to scrape a couple margin points here and a couple margin points there. So each year we were able to end up, you know, in a good double-digit margin place. And we use that money to fund the new things that we were doing. Because one of the things we've learned for sure is the day you stop innovating is the day somebody catches up and surpasses you.
Oh, yeah.
So even in a down market, you got to keep pushing the innovation envelope. You have to keep coming up with new ideas.
Yeah. I've just noticed that when the recessions happen, there is a malaise. There is worry. There is wondering if you got a job. There is, especially in staffing, you feel like you're in the wrong place at the wrong time. So people are half in and half out. So the whole emotional management's tough. So then you turn around and you say, we're going to have to be innovative. And you look at these slugs around the table that look all tired and they look like they need antidepressant medicine. I mean, really?
You know what
one of my clients did? You know, if you didn't do this, try this sometimes when you get one of those moments. They brought in a guy to do improv training. Because the whole thinking pattern of improv is to mirror the things that are, you know, that you're being told and memorize a couple pieces and twist the words or twist the mental image into something funny, into, you know, making it feel funny. And the twist keeps, it's exercising the brain. It makes you laugh. We've used it for some salespeople because if they get so serious about these guys are price sensitive, we can't sell and this is awful and for us. It somehow improv skills help them sell better. And it's more fun. So I'd be curious, you know, you got these gloomy gusses that were going through all that. How did you manage the emotional energy?
Well, you know, I'm not sure I did a great job because...
But you don't look bad for 22.
Well, you know, the challenge is that you're trying to manage their energy and you are suffering from the same ailment,
yeah,
right? Because,
yeah,
you know, you go home and you go, wow, am I going to, you know, am I going to make it through another month? This is
and
really
you can't
hard.
Say it. You can't say it.
And you can't ever come in and say, you know, guys, I'm not sure we're going to make it, right? You know, I'll tell you some things we did that helped. We moved our strategy meetings from outside of the building.
Yeah.
And we had them, you know, we had them in my house. We had them in other people's houses.
Yeah.
You know, change the environment, kind of change the feel.
Yeah.
So we did that. We invited our employees to provide more input. You know, people who normally wouldn't participate. We asked everybody for ideas.
Yeah.
You know, started visiting with people more often and having kind of impromptu discussions. Yeah. We would take ideas and vet them with members of the team.
Yeah.
And you know,
and even if some of them didn't sound like they were great at first, you listen to everybody and hear them out. Yeah, that pays off.
Yeah, you know, every bad idea can lead you to a good idea. It might just be adjacent to it.
Yeah.
And, you know, the other thing we did is we stuck to our script, meaning that we're a pretty virtual company. We're never all in the office at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, most days, maybe 20% of our staff is in the office, and it changes every day which 20% is there.
Yeah.
So our script had always been to have all hands meetings every 6 weeks, you know, give updates, be candid. We did not change that script. We kept the meeting schedule, even though we had less to cover. We got even more open about finances.
Good. Because people worry, you know what, if you don't tell them, they think it's worse than it was, right?
Oh, absolutely. They, you know, as soon as you see a layoff, you have to explain why you're doing it, where the company is, and how this will make things better for the people who are left moving forward.
Yeah.
And, you know, we became more open with the situation financially that the company was in. And, you know, on days that it was close, we said, hey, guys, we're running it really close, and we got 60 days to make some sales. And if we don't make sales, I'm going to have to do some stuff I don't want to do.
Yeah.
So let's do everything we can to sell.
Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah.
You know, I learned something from a client of mine years ago. The gal owned the business and was a real central part of it, and she got breast cancer. And she had that whole decision about, is she going to be private about it? Be real quiet, you know, very personal and all that, and decided no. If she wasn't completely transparent about exactly what kind of surgery, exactly what kind of treatment, what her timing's going to be, and how much help she needed from everybody else, et cetera, all their worry about she's going to die, or that the business was going to die, or they should may as well go away now because the leader of the business is gone, or fretting and talking about it, making it bigger than it is. You know, she talked about it a lot. Now, I'm sure it took practice. She could cry at home. You okay?
Yeah, I'm okay.
Just saying, talking about sickness, got your coughing again, yeah? I learned that. You know, so the same thing with the economic, you know, illness. Anything that changes that make people come from a position of worry, the more candid. And the other thing I've noticed is you have to say it once, then you have to say it again, and you got to prove it again, and you got to say it again, because it does. When you talk about negative money or negative dynamics, people have this, they can only hear part of the sentence and then they tune out, and they remember only the, you know, a piece, right? Did you find in your last couple of years you've had to say things over and over and over?
Oh, many times, and you really have to pay attention that your actions are perfectly aligned with your words and vice versa. Because any small deviation in message from actions is alarming, right?
I sent one of my clients, I said, you got to go on an exercise program and you got to go to the gym, because you were saying to your employees, everything's fine and we're, you know, we're nimble and we're going to be survivors and we're growing. And you look like a slug that's about, a couch potato that's about ready to retire and you're fed up. You have got to get back out there and get the endorphins going and feel better. And I'm telling you, it helped this guy immensely with his voice. Smart.
Anything
else you want to add to, you know, how did you build in innovation during the whole process?
Well, the other thing we did, and this is an easy one, is we called up our client and said, you know, I know you don't need us, but if you did, what would you buy first?
I love that.
So what's coming that we could... We could prepare for. And, you know, clients are real candid about what they need, what they don't need, what they no longer need, what they might need in the future.
I noticed that in market research firms, they start asking things about where are you going, what's your biggest problem now, And right. my client wants to be ahead of you. What's the thing that you're worried about that they need to be working on right now so that when you hit it, it's already in place? Great.
Absolutely.
Great question. And some surprises. They'll say, you know, I'm worried about China. And maybe they wouldn't have known, you know, that they had competition there. Well, we'll take our last break, and then we're going to come back. We're going to talk about the future. I understand you have a new office in Manhattan, so I want to know, what are you up to? This is the Growth Strategist, Eldonna Amber. We'll be right back with Harry Grinlund of Double Star.
Please pay attention to the following message. Are you trying to maximize the resources to the following that are available message. In your business? Are you trying to
Do you
maximize
think your business
the resources
could
that are
having
enhanced
negotiation
skills?
Do you think
so,
your business
could benefit
you
by having enhanced
more
negotiation
than three
skills?
Decades of negotiation
if so, this message
experience,
is for
Greg
you,
Williams, the master
more than
negotiator and body language
of negotiation
expert,
author
Greg
of the book,
Williams, the master negotiator
afraid,
and body language
no more
expert,
has trained and
author of the book,
business
negotiate
worldwide
afraid, no more
with their negotiation
and assisted business
if you want to gain an edge in your negotiation with competitors, have your top people trained.
If you want to gain an edge in your
negotiation
with
competitors,
and techniques,
have your top people
and discover
trained
how to read body language
tactics,
to obtain greater insight in someone's real
and
state of mind when negotiating.
Contact Greg Williams at
609-2100.
Contact Greg Williams at
609-2100.
That number again is 609-2100.
By doing so, you and your business will be better positioned to win more negotiations.
You and your business will be better positioned.
You can also read
more
negotiations on negotiation.
You can also read free articles on negotiator.com.
www.themasternegotiator.com.
Contact Greg Williams, the master negotiator and body language expert.
Contact Greg Williams, the master negotiator and body language expert.
609-369-2100.
The number again is 609-369-2100.
You're logged on to The Growth Strategist with Eldonna Ambler. Call in right now with your questions and comments toll-free at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Now let's jump into another segment of The Growth Strategist.
Welcome back to the show.
Here's
this is
Eldonna
The Growth
Ambler.
Strategist, Eldonna Ambler. And you know that each week we go through different growth strategies and industries and geographic locations, and then every once in a while I try to get these people that are talking about those core things that affect all of us. So I brought back one of our previous guests. In fact, Harry Grinlund, that was the first guest in 2005. And he's the CEO of Double Star, and this is a brilliant man. I think he's really very bright for talent management and workforce assessments and analysis. And, you know, they took their hit just like a lot of other people during the recession. You can imagine, you know, they're in workforce-related anything. Guess what? Even if they're brighter than bright, they're analyzing how it's going to affect them. And so they, you know, they got knocked back from 110 to 40 employees, but they've been profitable the entire time. So we've talked about sales, and we've talked about staff, and we talk about innovation. What I want to talk in this session is, you know, where you're going in the future and some of the strategic things you're trying now. And so one of the things I'm aware of, let's start with this. This is mirror. Let's see if I'm hearing you right. My impression is that one of the things you're leading with are some more focused assessments, you know, to help people even know what kind of HR talent do they have in place, because it's kind of going away in some of these corporations. What do they have in the house, out of house? Where are they? Is that right? You know, that you're trying to assess that kind of stuff for people so they're centered?
Yeah, we've developed an assessment methodology for something we call service delivery. So what happens on an assessment, a typical assessment, is people go in and draw process maps and charts and boxes and stuff, right?
That's not what they need. Not as a first step.
Beautiful. They're beautiful works of art, but they're kind of operationally useless. So what we've done is we take a very different angle, and we go to the end customer, the end user of the service, and we assess how well the function, and mostly it's either HR or recruitment, is delivering the services that the clients need.
Gotcha.
And we measure that gap. So we've done a surprising number of these in the past, say, 6 months.
I'm glad. That's a good sign about the economy. People are asking, you know, receptive to do it.
Absolutely. I know. I think part of what's happened is that because HR departments and recruiting departments especially were decimated, I think anecdotally they probably lost 30% of the jobs in HR, you know, and because of the recession. And as a result, I'm not sure companies know what they have, how good they are, how much capability they have left. So we're getting a pretty higher than average number of requests for assessments. So
that's good. I'm glad to hear it. And that's part of your innovation is you knew you had to get a refined assessment. I know we've had to do one of ours is a gut check because if people have a strategic plan and then they pause and they're not excited about it, it's like, wait a minute, you know, look around the room and if everybody's excited about the strategy and convinced this year's going to be better than last, come on, get full board, do what you need to do to be motivated and kick in because doing it halfway is going to hurt you. So it's like a gut check. Let's go through this and say, should we be excited? And the answer is yes. And if there's a little tweak, let's do it now so you don't hold back. That is not the type of first appointment I would have needed to have in 2005. But that's exactly what people need now is to wake up so they even know what they've got. So I'm glad they're doing it with HR. It's great. You're opening an office or you have opened an office in Manhattan. What are you up to?
Yeah, we just put we have some employees in New York and a couple clients, but not a lot. And we decided that coming out of the recession, one of the things we've noticed is that if we used to have 50 chances a year to have a client, we now have 30 chances a year to have a client. So the only way to kind of grow at an accelerated pace is to either win all of those 30 or to expand the pool. And one of the ways to expand the pool, of course, is to move to an adjacent geography. So
that's an expensive territory. So that's a commitment. You really are feeling like some of the companies that are headquartered in Manhattan or at least have a major presence there, you can compete. And a lot of times if you're from Delaware, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, et cetera, you can look like you're an encroacher. You're, you know.
Well, that's why we put an office there because we wanted a 212 area code.
Yeah.
You know, we wanted physical space in the city.
Yeah. You may have to hire Snooki or somebody like that so they sound more local.
Well, you know, we can do a little New York thing if you want us to. You know. You know, it's interesting. We have enough clients already based in New York to be credible. We just never push the we're here and we're ready to do business in Manhattan in a serious way. So we committed for a year, and we're going to give it a full year to see if we can get some traction. And if we get traction, great. If not, we haven't lost all that much, and we'll still probably be able to get a couple clients anyway. So
you definitely have to promote it. You can't say if they build it, they will come. So, you know, the last segment of the program, I always ask this of the guests, you know, what are you looking for at this point? Are you looking for buildings, customers, new employees, a number two, financing? What are you looking for?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the biggest thing we lost in the recession were customers who were in our partnership for the longer term. Mm-hmm. So we had a lot of 2 and 3 year contracts, right? And what we have now are a lot of 1 to 2 year contracts. So, and actually, we probably have mostly 3 month to 1 year contracts.
I was going to ask you, you know, didn't some of your business end up going back to month, quarter to quarter? Because it happened to most people.
It actually did that, but, you know, what it also did was it simply evaporated. So a client who had, like, we had an 11-year relationship with a client on three-year renewals. The client decided they were going to take it in-house because the margin that we made on that was significant for them.
Yeah.
So they, you know, we actually had to, one of the most bizarre and interesting learnings of my life was to negotiate with a client to take our people.
Wow.
Wow.
You wouldn't have dreamt that. So the main thing you're looking for is some long customers that are in the long term and can tell that if they have this high-level talent management and workforce analysis mentality from you and the staffing, it's going to go better and you're going to be brighter. Well, I always like to ask that. Now, if somebody wants to contact you and do business with you, how do they reach you, Harry?
At Harry Grendling, harry.grendling@doublestarinc.com.
So in case somebody's not seeing your name over your face like you and I are seeing, it's G-R-I-E-N-D-L-I-N-G, so you don't mess up the name. And any telephone number or whatever?
Yeah, my number is 484-919-1140.
And for those of you who want to reach me, I get a lot of emails and calls after the programs with questions. And if you have suggestions for other guests, et cetera, or you'd like, you want to recommend a guest, if you know my name, it is easy to get me, aldona@ambler.com, A-L-D-O-N-N-A at A-M-B-L-E-R.com. And the toll-free number in the United States is 1-888-ALDONA. I have multiple companies, and I ended up with too many phone numbers. So if you're dealing directly with me, that's the number you get. So you don't even have to look it up in your database. I always end the show with the tagline for the business, the strategic planning business, and that is, I wish for you accelerated growth with sustained profitability. Remember that the secret is to reverse the phrase. First, you have to know what drives your profitability. Harry does. And be able to sustain it. He walks the talk, and he's actually been able to do it through recessions. Are you? Then you can get fancy and start talking about growth strategies like having an office in Manhattan, bundling your services, looking at delivery modes, and doubling your marketing. And then you can step on the gas. So I thank Harry for being a role model for what we're talking about. This is the Growth Strategist, Aldona Ambler, signing out.
You've been listening to the Growth Strategist Radio Show. Tune in every Tuesday, 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern, for a new, exciting episode.